Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, J. Michael Michael here, and if you're like me, you love talk radio. And if you're like me, you love to watch or listen to what you can on your AM dial, and you can't find anything to listen to because there's no good talk shows anymore. So, listen to LA Talk Radio. That's right, we're at .com, and it has it all. And right now, we have the beginning. You know what? I can't even talk tonight, guys. We have the beginning writer's very favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, put your feet up, and enjoy, because we've got all of that and Henry Park, too. And it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another wonderful evening of broadcasting right here on LA Talk Radio. That's right, LA Talk Radio, where you don't need a radio to listen. All you need is your computer or your mobile device of some sort.
And if you don't know the theme song, you don't love Westerns.
That's right. That is right. Hey, it's Jim Christina. I am your host tonight in the studio with Bob Brill. Hey. We have Bobby Jean Bell on the phone. Bobby?
Greetings from Albuquerque.
Albuquerque. And you guys are staying at a hotel tonight.
No, we're just the convention. The Western Music Association convention is here at the Hotel Albuquerque.
Ah.
And there have been events and workshops and things happening all day. So
gotcha.
I am broadcasting from a small office space here.
Wow. Well, of course, if you know what this is the theme to.
Ask our guest.
I will ask our guest.
That question.
Wait a minute. Let me introduce our guest properly. Tonight, we have on the writer's block, in person, in the studio, the man, the plan, the roundup himself, Mr. Henry Park.
Greetings, literature lovers. Oh, boy. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press. Item one.
Okay, so that was the theme to what?
Silverado?
Good Amen. Man.
All right.
Amen.
Hey, you got it right.
We
didn't bring a Cupid doll.
Yeah.
We didn't even bring a whoopee cushion.
No. We brought up a bottle of water.
That's better. Yeah.
He'll need that more than a whoopee cushion.
What do they used to say? It's
never
better
know.
To have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. Hi, Henry.
Hello, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, my friend. And how the hell are you?
I'm doing great.
Well, good. Before we get really started into your stuff, let's find out what's going on in the roundup.
Well, let's see. The current roundup has my interview with Bobby Crawford. That's my lead story, and he is the fella that was, well, he's Johnny Crawford's brother. Johnny's, of course, the boy that everyone knows from The Rifleman.
Right.
Bobby is his older brother, who had essentially the same role on Laramie.
Right.
And went on to be, as a child star, he starred in a TV movie directed by George Roy Hill, got nominated for an Emmy for that, and decades later, he ended up being George Roy Hill's producer. On films like The Sting. So,
wow.
Very interesting
really?
Career. Yes.
I didn't know that. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Oh, see, we just woke Bob up. He was up all night with the shooting and those.
Oh, months. Yeah. It was 5 o'clock this morning. I was supposed to get off, and they kept me there because I know the area and everything, so
yeah.
I didn't stay still.
Bummer.
It was
terrible.
Yeah. So, anyway, we have Bobby. My brain is fried tonight, right? Okay. I've been dealing with DirecTV
tonight
for like the flash
tonight.
Days. Tonight.
Yes. Among others.
Tonight.
Yes. Only tonight.
Yeah. Anyway, Bobby Crawford. Mm-hmm. And your other stories are?
They're up there on the roundup. I'm completely blank.
I don't know.
They're fascinating, and you must go to them immediately.
Aha.
There's a new Western starting on Netflix.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. I saw it today, and I thought, I got to watch that. But I don't remember. It takes place in the 1890s or something like that.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. I thought when you said that, I was thinking of something which is actually not a traditional period Western, but a 1930s Prohibition era thing. But so that's not what you're talking about.
No.
I'm not sure.
No, this is like a six-episode short series type thing. Kind of like, what was the one that had,
Godless?
That's the one.
Yes. Wasn't that a wonderful piece?
It was, yeah, really different. Really different.
I didn't watch Godless. Oh. I didn't. I watched Longmire.
Longmire.
I watched Yellowstone and a few others. I didn't get into Godless.
Well, we have a tradition here, don't we, Bobby? We have to listen. We have to watch Longmire.
It's a law.
Bobby, did you leave us?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm here. I'm actually on Henry's Western Roundup
blog
online to try to answer the question you asked him earlier while you guys are all talking in the studio.
Okay. I don't know what I write. What is in there?
Well, the next story is about a premiere, KCET, presenting Tender Nature. Right. November 7th. So that actually was last night.
It's an old headline.
But they do rerun it, the Tending Nature series, and also Lost L.A. is back on it. They have a terrific episode about ghost towns.
Is that PBS?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is now. KCET separated from PBS for several years.
Yes.
And now they've joined up again.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I know they were really hard to find on the TV dial for a long time.
Well, you know, I have to ask you the question, and I know what you're going to tell me. You didn't do it.
Uh-oh.
What have I been asking you about for months?
Does it have to do with somebody who loves Westerns that have been forsaken?
There you go!
Yes, I have reached out to Mr. Terry. Uh-huh. Now, but I have not heard back from him, but when I say I reached out, it was yesterday.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
Not
well,
like
that's okay.
You know, what's taken until
months ago.
I was going to ask the question. You know,
that's
you
right.
I was going to have so.
Tell you I got the interview with Wes Studi?
Yes. And at least I put the spur in your boots. Right?
Richard was the one that was beeping you about that one.
That's right. But I'm spreading the word several months late.
I guess the thing just has me intrigued about Forsaken Westerns. I'm not a huge Bob Terry fan. It's just, you know, not sure I like the presentation that much, but I like the program itself and the fact that there are so many shows that never made it that were Westerns. And during the golden era of the Westerns, which was the 50s and early 60s, you know, for television anyway, we had all these Westerns and everybody was making a Western pilot and so many of them didn't go anywhere.
Right.
And so many of them just bombed it. Some of them were really bad.
Or some of them just lasted a season like the Westerner.
Right. You know, but some of them were just awful.
Show.
Some were just awful.
Terrific,
there was one with, had a, an Olympic gymnast, a young lady, and can't remember her name now, who played in the pilot episode. I don't think it ever took off, but it was like, this is really awful. But there's some really good ones, too.
There's a real reason why some of these Westerns are forsaken.
Yes.
For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, if you go to YouTube and search Forsaken Westerns, there is a series.
A ton of them, yeah.
I don't know how many episodes they have, but what they are is they show entire half-hour shows.
Right.
Westerns that are, some of them are from anthology series, some are just very short-lived series. But the majority
are
pilots, some that I don't think even ever got aired.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of good stuff there, and certainly a lot of very good people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks that thought they were going to star in a Western series, and it didn't happen, but really
it's
worth seeing.
And movie stars, too. I mean, people that were big names.
Oh, yeah.
I always think it's kind of fun when it's you're watching the show, and all of a sudden it says, insert commercial here.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, that show didn't get too far.
Well, I mean, you know, a good actor in a bad show is still a bad show with a good actor.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, you're not going to watch a show just because Rory Calhoun's in it.
Wash your mouth. Bad,
his wife did.
I've seen Rory in some pretty bad movies. But I love The Texan.
Yeah.
Yes. How about Motel Hell? That's a little later.
No. Motel Hell?
Yes, that was one of his last ones.
Well, I'm sure it probably was.
But he was very funny in it. He was
he?
He was in on the joke, yeah.
Ah.
Lita Barron, who he was married to, who also played in a lot of his westerns as the, she was always the little Mexican girl, quote unquote, or the flame or whatever. She lived in Palm Springs when I was working down there years ago, and we did a talk show, and she hosted that show. And every chance she got to bring her daughter on and say, "And who's your daddy?" <You know? laughs> It was really fun. And they'd been divorced for years, you know, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah, there was 50s were like, wow, this is really great time for cowboy shows.
Well, you know, it was a whole lot easier, and you know, you didn't have CGI,
right?
You had a guy sitting on a horse with the background moving, you know,
yeah,
and things like that. And there was some really bad stuff, but it was so good because, you know, it really got you into it. And, you know, come on, when we were growing up in the 50s and the 60s, you know, one of the things you got for your birthday was two guns
or a hat and a badge.
You played
Spurs.
Cowboys and Indians. Yeah. So,
or right. Cowboys and Cowboys.
There you go,
right?
Yeah,
well, Cowboys and Indians now is not politically correct.
No, but that's why I categorized it in the 50s.
Cowboys and
actually,
Native
it was
Americans.
Cowboys and dead Indians usually.
Yeah, most of the time, you know, unfortunately.
So, Henry.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk a little bit about your screenwriting experiences.
Okay.
And you've written several screenplays.
Oh, well, I've written dozens. As far as ones that have gotten made into movies, it's a shorter list. But
You can talk about those one. First if you'd like.
Oh, sure. My last year in college, I wrote a car crash film called Speed Trap.
Oh.
Co-wrote it.
That actually was made into a motion picture, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Starring Joe Don Baker, Tyne Daly, Richard Jekyll, Robert Loggia, Timothy Agagliacari, and Lana Wood.
Lana Wood?
Did I say Richard Jekyll?
Yeah, Richard Jekyll.
Yes, I
actually went to high school with my mother.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What a nice guy.
They were friends for years and years and years.
Well, there was a lot of, you know, pretty big name people in there. I mean, recognition people in that film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it was directed by
Robert
Earl
Loggia?
Bellamy. Oh, yeah.
Robert Loggia?
Earl Bellamy?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes. Man who directed at one time more TV episodes than anyone else.
Wow.
And did a lot of good movies. Was also a busy assistant director to a lot of big people. I know he worked for Nicholas Ray early on.
Mm.
I'm trying to think who else.
Wow.
But, it is sort of nice when... Tyne Daly comes up, I always say, well, yes, and I wrote her first part as a policewoman before Cagney and Lacey.
Now she's back in Murphy Brown.
There you go.
True.
Which, incidentally, she's on tonight at 9:30 on CBS.
She's Phil's sister, Phyllis.
That's right. Oh, that's right, yeah. Well, you also write, oh, my God, you do so much writing. You write for your Roundup,
right?
And you write for True West magazine.
I certainly do.
We have a video camera right here. As a matter of fact, if you go to facebook.com/LA Talk Radio, you can look at Bob Brill live. There he is, and Henry Park, who's holding up a copy of True West magazine. This is December of 2018.
Right.
So if you haven't got your copy,
you need it.
You need it.
You can read my article interview with Tim Matheson about his Western career, which is sort of fun because...
Kurt Russell was in it.
That's right. Yeah, they starred together in The Quest.
The Quest, that is correct.
You know, Henry, I got a question a couple of weeks ago at the Wild Bunch Film Festival, and it involved current Westerns and current Western scripts. You know, we still have a good number of Western scripts, obviously, out there.
I've got 60 of them out there.
Yeah, I've got a bunch, too. And they asked me in the Q&A after one of my short film debuted regarding, okay, because we have so many more people getting involved in Westerns, is that going to make us see more Western feature films? And I said, no, I didn't think so. I thought we're going to see more things like Netflix and short limited series and things like that. I'm kind of curious, from you're coming from that background as well, what your thoughts were on that.
Well, it seems to me that there has been a definite growth of Westerns for television, as you say, for Netflix, for HBO. Actually, it's one of the curious things is now we're going to get a feature, Deadwood. Mm-hmm. They're shooting that right now.
Yeah.
But, of course, that started as television. And we have series coming back. We've got another season of Yellowstone coming. We've got another season of The Sun coming. There's a lot of other stuff that has been announced. And there are odd things like the, what is the correct title? Buster Scruggs, the Coen Brothers one. What's it called? It's coming out very soon. But it was shot actually as a Netflix series.
Ah.
And then was recut into a movie.
Oh.
And so that's coming out very shortly.
Huh.
And so there really does seem to be much more production on television.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not exactly sure why, except that perhaps because feature film production is so expensive.
Yeah.
And so there is, I think, some value if you want to do a Godless to do it as 10 episodes or 8 episodes, and you can spread the expense out and also get a continuing audience. What I have seen is that you have, as far as actual theatrical release type features, and a lot of them direct to home video, a situation where either they go very big budget or infinitesimal.
Right.
I just was at the American Film Market this past weekend, where people from all over the world bring their pictures to sell to, you know, they're all independent. And in the last few years, because this is, I think, my third year going, there had been more Westerns the last few years. This year, it seemed noticeably lower. I probably came across 5 or 6 that were not coming back from previous years, and they were all tiny budget. Now, that doesn't mean they're not good,
but
of course, they do have to deal with severe limitations.
Especially when you're doing a period piece where, you know, costuming is a much bigger deal.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the way that people have always said now, you know, you make a horror movie, you can't lose money. No one has ever lost money on a horror movie. They used to say that about Westerns.
Yeah.
And the reason was because you had the Western towns, you had the ranches, you had all the stuff available, all the actors knew how to ride.
Right.
So it was a quick, cheap thing to throw together.
Right.
But we have so many less being done that everyone seems to have to start at ground zero all the time.
Yeah.
So it is interesting. There were a couple of companies that I spoke to people where they're like making their third and fourth Western, and they're small outfits, but they've learned how to do it and essentially to crank them out. I think we're going to see more and more of those. I know about a couple of pictures coming up in the next year or two that are, and I can't name them yet because it's not official, but low-budget Westerns, but with respectable budgets and familiar actors. And I think we're going to see the bottom budget things somewhat upgraded.
Right.
But I still think that most of the money's in television right now.
Well, you were at the movie set for the one that had Michael Paré in it.
Right.
And Kris Kristofferson.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember who else. Oh, what's his name? Guy with the long hair. Trace Adkins.
Oh, yes.
And they filmed that out, like, in Big Sky.
That's right, Big Sky Ranch, the old place where they used to shoot Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah. And that's where that doubled as hilly Kansas out there during Gunsmoke years.
That's right.
Yeah. But I've seen that movie now probably a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always tell when Peter Sciarico has his fingers in a movie, you pretty much can tell it.
Yeah. You start saying, I remember that saddle.
Huh?
You start saying, I remember that saddle.
I mean, he uses one that I traded him all the time, and I could always tell it. There's my saddle.
Well, the other thing that comes up, too, is we're seeing more horror westerns.
Yes.
The two genres being combined, which is the two low-budget genres being combined to make a film.
Bone Tomahawk is a good example.
Yeah, that is the best example because it is so many cuts above most of that sort of thing.
Exactly. It wasn't a low-budget movie. Well, it might have been, but
it didn't play
like one.
But no, it really, well, I'm trying to think of the fellow who wrote and directed it.
I don't know, but
he was a first-time director, but an experienced writer, and he just had a script that people really wanted to do.
Yeah,
and I mean that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, did you see that movie, Bob?
It's well worth seeing.
It actually is pretty good. That and Yellow, is it Yellow Rocks?
Yellow Rock.
Yeah. That's another one that's not bad.
Yeah, that's another one. I was actually on the set of everything you've talked you about so far.
Well, you get invited to all these things because you're the man.
Yeah.
What's your
and
favorite?
I know Peter Sciarrico.
And, well, yeah, doesn't everybody know
what's
Peter
What's the favorite thing you've done as far as scripts and films?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. As far as stuff that I've, my own stuff that I've written, which is not a Western, I wrote a film noir called Double Cross.
Okay.
Patrick Bergen, Jennifer Tilly, Kelly Preston. And it was, you know, it was not a big picture. It was a small, contained noir. And I think noirs work better low budget.
Yes.
Right.
And
they were kind of designed that way.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But the premise is a man played by Patrick Bergen driving across country gets in a minor car accident. And the woman whose car hit him is drunk and apologetic and asks him to lie a little about how it happened so she doesn't get her insurance canceled. So he agrees to it to be a nice guy, and because he's looking at Kelly Preston, and doesn't realize that he's given her an alibi for a murder. So it's... That's definitely my favorite of the things that I've written because, among other things, I was the only writer on it. It was my story and my screenplay, and when they had to loop stuff, I actually wrote the looping lines because I used to work on Voltron Defender of the Universe cartoon.
Oh, my God.
And so
careful,
you
Henry.
Those,
you're aging yourself.
But that show aged me because we did like 150 episodes in a year. But what you do when you're doing Japanese cartoons is you learn to count the number of times the mouths open and close, and that tells you how many syllables somebody can say, and so you write your dialogue by counting flaps. And I should say, I was not a writer on the show. I was in working in post-production coordinating, but I learned how to do it by doing that.
So wow.
That's what I did, you know, do all the looping lines on Double Cross.
Bobby Jean, are you still with us?
I am. I'm watching you all live
on
Facebook. You're all looking really great. And thank you for inviting me to get in on the conversation.
Sure. Hey, you know, you're the queen.
You know how it works. Jump in whenever you want. Be rude. Who cares?
Well, I have some questions for Henry when you come to a spot.
Go ahead.
I'm at a spot.
Hi, Henry.
Hi.
I'm curious. You're really the only guest that we have had that writes a blog and a magazine column.
Right.
And I'm kind of interested in learning how you got your blog started, how you have developed followers, and are blogs as still important today as they were when blogs first began?
Well, the way I got it started was going back to, I think, 2010. I've been doing it for 8 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always interested in Westerns. It was not my only interest. I've always been a comedy guy and a film noir guy, but those comedy to some degree and film noir especially is very well served on the internet.
Yes.
But what I realized was that I kept getting into film festivals on the last day and missing screenings of things because there was no central place for information about Western. So I decided I would be that just to keep track of film festivals and things like that. So I started doing Henry's Western Roundup just for that kind of event. And then very quickly I started being contacted by people that were saying, you know, Robert Woods, a spaghetti Western actor, is going to be doing a signing at my store. You want to come talk to him? So I started doing interviews, and it just grew because nobody else was tracking this stuff. I often say to people, the tough thing about getting Western people online is it's so hard to balance a laptop on a saddle horn. So, but I just started doing it, and it started growing like crazy. And it's funny, I was just showing Jim before we started.
No, that's your ad.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't showing him the ad.
No.
But I was just looking at where Henry's Western Roundup is read today. And, like, among places this month, not surprisingly, the United States is where I had the most page views, but followed by Turkey with nearly 1,000, France with 245, the Ukraine, Italy, Romania, Portugal, Russia, Indonesia, the UK. I'm kind of stunned and have been, you know, all along at how widely and distantly read it is. So I guess I'm doing a good job of reaching people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know a lot of people who read your blog. They love it. They do it whenever you get it on. I mean, sometimes you're a little late.
Yeah, that actually has been a real tough thing, is balancing writing Henry's Western Roundup with the True West articles. Because I used to religiously do the Roundup every week.
Right.
And now I'm not quite making once a month.
Well, for those listeners that don't recognize the voice here in the studio, Henry comes in on the first Monday or the first Thursday of the month and does his Western Roundup when he can remember.
I work with notes a lot,
and we can answer the phone.
That's right.
And we can answer the phone. Yeah.
Well, that was on you.
And then one night I couldn't get my mouse to work, so I couldn't answer the phone. Oh man.
Well, and Bob, you write a blog too.
I do.
How? Bob, can you tell us a little bit about your blog? You know, how you organize your time to get your blog out?
I write it. I schedule it to write it every Tuesday, and then I publish it every Wednesday. And if I have enough time, I usually try to write one ahead so that I've got one in the can in case the next week for some reason something comes up and I can't do it. And then I publish it I throw in the photos and the YouTube videos. I've gone to adding a short video, a clip in every one. It's called Baseball in the 1960s. And it's all about, obviously, baseball
in the 1960s.
And, you know, and I use a lot of reference from baseballref.com, which is the most incredible baseball website in the history of the world. You can track almost anything there. And I'll just pick out a game that seems interesting amongst all the thousands of games and write about that and what led up to it and do a little research. And I enjoy it. It takes me, to be honest with you, it takes me about an hour to write it and then about an hour to proof it, you know, because I throw in pictures of baseball cards of some of the guys that are key in there. But yeah, no, I do it every Tuesday and then polish it on Wednesday and then publish it on Wednesday. And I've gone to using MailChimp as well for a mail list, which I'm not sure if it helps or not. It makes it easier for me. And then I hit all the Facebook groups, which are I posted on my Facebook pages, and I kind of target Facebook groups that are similar groups growing up in the 60s, you know, and some of the team sites and things like that.
You grew up in the 60s?
Yeah.
No, you grew up in the 50s. Don't lie.
Well, I grew up in both, if you want the truth. I had a doctor once that said, you know, do you he was getting put under for a dental thing or something like that. And the dentist asked him, do you want to be put to sleep or do you want... He goes, I'm a child of the 60s, man. Give me drugs.
I like it. I like it. That's what happened when my lung collapsed when I was in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
And I went... They took me to the hospital and
the my guy hometown. Says, My hometown.
Yeah.
Obviously.
At Beaver. Big Beaver Medical Center.
There you go.
And Beaver... It's
false, yeah.
But anyway, the doctor says, well, we're going to have to give you a chest tube. I says, oh, God. The last time I had one was in Barstow a year ago, and no, nothing. They just cut my chest open and shoved a tube in. Uh-huh. He goes, no worries, man. We got drugs. I didn't even have to ask. They just gave them to me. Okay, we're going to break for just a few minutes. We're going to sell some stuff and we'll be back to you here in a couple of minutes. And so I'm going to let Henry lead off with this. And Henry, take it away.
No one needs another boring shirt is one of the most famous quotes of Rock Mount Ranch Wears founder Papa Jack. Out West asks, what's on your wish list this holiday? A bohemian-style shirt with dazzling embroidery and a pinch of rock star bling? Or go Americana with a cozy plaid flannel shirt to chase the chill away? Come on over to OutWestShop.com to find the perfect shirt for everyone on your list, even for yourself. Use coupon code GIFT, G-I-F-T, and save $10 off your order of $50 or more. Toll free 1-877-340-9378. It's always a great day out west.
Yay! Good job, Henry.
Thank you.
And you have typed your final period. Oops.
You have typed your final period. You've stacked your last chapter, and you sat back in your chair, and you said to yourself, I'm done. Nope, not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more to have a completed book. You know what it takes? It takes editing and rewriting, and then more editing and more rewriting, and formatting, proofreading, more rewriting, more editing.
More slashing.
I'm sorry?
More slashes.
And just more slashes and blue and red pencil. Then if you're real lucky, you can devise a cover and maybe get some printed as a proof and then approve that and maybe get some books printed and on your shelf at home. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very small investment, we can do all of the above for you, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing and help you get some dollars in your pocket as well. We're here for new writers that don't have the foggiest of what they're doing. And having learned it, we can share and help you get a book of which you can be proud. So give us a call at 805-795-3165 or email jcristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpaolinelli, P-A-O-L-I-N-E-L-L-I, at tuscanybaybooks.com. Or just get a hold of us and send us a manuscript and let us navigate the rest for you. So there you have it. Okay, my friend Russ, who's supposed to be here tonight. You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended. But, what about the dog? Bob, what about the dog?
He's going to have the best time.
That's it. All Dogs Rule day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home and puts a smile on his face, it'll leave you wondering whose vacation was better. And we're going to go with the dog. All Dogs Rule, 805-524-1100. And I'm sure Russ is just going to be thrilled. And yeah, they do. Oh, then they got a whole thing.
Yeah.
We're back. It's now 7:32, and if you want to call and talk to Henry, and I'm sure is your friend Court listening tonight?
I hope so.
Well, Court, if you're out there, or if anyone out there wants to talk to Henry Park, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That number again is 818-602-4929. And I wanted to let everyone know that we have, in case you have heard us talking about these wonderful coffee mugs that we have, if you would like to have one very own of yours, then feel free to give me personally an email. It's jimcristina@yahoo.com. The mugs are $9.95, and the cost of shipping is $3.50. And we'll get them to you toot sweet.
And they work.
And they do. They hold liquid.
Yeah, they hold liquid.
They do hold liquid.
You know, they don't have any holes in them or anything.
Liquid.
They keep the coffee warm.
We keep the coffee warm and the booze cold. That's it. Okay, last week I also mentioned my little friends over there in Simi Valley at Smash Burger.
Yes.
Did you go?
I did. I haven't had a chance. I was going to go this week, and I didn't have a chance to go.
I dropped them off some coffee mugs the other day.
Oh, did you?
I did. And you know, they were just so appreciative. But have you ever heard of Smash Burger, Henry?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. They're
I'm going to make a point of going Friday.
They ball their burgers. That's what it says
radio,
on the wall.
It's what it says on the wall.
Yeah, you got to give this guy a little bit of break here, okay?
Yeah.
You have to realize what he's dealing with here.
It's live radio. And they ball their meat like you do at home. Uh-huh. And they smash it. And they cook it. And you get everything they cook is fresh. When you order it, it's cooked right then. Nothing sits out. Oh, my God. The food there is phenomenal.
Tomorrow's lunch.
They even have beer sodas.
No, really?
Coors Light. Yeah, the corporation is in Denver, so they have Coors.
Where is it?
It's on First and LA in Simi Valley, right across the street from the Shell stations on the northeast corner.
It used to be a little mini mall there.
It used to be the Acapulco restaurant.
Okay, because we used to do baseball card shows over there years
and,
ago.
Just great food and fun people and nice people that own it and run it. And so, anyway, all right. Again, that number here is 818-602-4929. Now, let's talk about your friend Court Joyner for just a little bit.
All righty.
Because we love Court.
We do indeed.
We do indeed. And Court's been a good friend of the show and a good friend of ours for a
good
number
friend of
years.
Ours. Yes, indeed.
And you do a lot of voiceovers with Court and a lot of readings and whatever it is that you do.
Right. Audio commentaries.
Audio commentaries. There we go. And I don't know how you got into it, but you guys seem to have a great time doing it.
Well, we really do. It's funny. I'm very lucky that Court invited me to do this because he had been doing it and doing, you know, he is a special feature.
Yes.
And
in his own right.
In his own right, absolutely. And he has done, I know, more than 100 DVDs and Blu-rays, mm-hmm. special feature things with interviews and so on. But he had been doing audio commentary on quite a few, and he was about to do another Lee Van Cleef picture, and suggested that it might be more interesting to listen if, rather than just talking to him by himself, mm-hmm. he had somebody to bounce things off of, and got them to let me do it, which is great because we've done about a dozen since then.
Yeah,
and doing that kind of stuff, it's first of all very hard to not stop talking for the entire 90 minutes.
I'm sure.
But you have to do it, and you do come up dry after a while.
I'm also sure of that.
And it's just so much better to be able to do it as a conversation. And Court and I both do a lot of research. I mean, we know a lot about the kind of pictures we talk about anyway. But we also both do a lot of research, and we don't talk about it ahead of time. So it is sort of funny, because sometimes our notes are almost identical, and then they're or things that are completely different. And it's the fun of having a real conversation and surprising the other person with information and getting surprised yourself.
Yeah, Court's a kind of a funny dude, because you ask him a question about a movie, Court will tell you not only who was in it, who that directed it, who produced it, who was the executive producer. Bobby, catch me if I'm wrong. He also will tell you the costumer, the production designer,
everybody.
Who was the chauffeur? The guy, he's like an encyclopedia of movies.
Yes, he'll also tell you who wrote the novel.
Right.
And who published it and who his agent is.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And if it comes down to it, who wrote the screenplay? And a lot of times it was him.
That's right. He usually works that in if that's...
Hey, that when you know your own stuff, it's easier to do.
Well, you better know your own stuff.
Yes.
I mean, it's like Michael. Who's Michael? Help me out, Bobby. God, he's been on the show a couple times now.
Michael.
Druckman.
Oh, Druckman? Michael Druckman?
Yeah. I mean, the guy, he's another encyclopedia.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, Michael sends me emails all the time. He's going to be in town. He wants to come in the show. That's fine. Whatever you want. There's a chair always open. But he's just, I mean, he's a walking encyclopedia. He worked with John Carpenter, I guess. No.
He worked for Roger Corman.
Roger Corman for a lot of years.
Oh, yes. He directed, I think, a couple for him and wrote several.
Right, yeah. The one that he wrote that Corman made, Cheyenne Warrior.
Yes.
I actually bought that copy.
That is one of the really best of the obscure, the low-budget westerns.
Right.
It is a beautifully...
Very well done.
Really.
Really, really good movie. And if you haven't seen it, it's called Cheyenne Warrior, Roger Corman film. Michael Druckman wrote it. Good movie.
I have to ask you, Henry, what's your favorite western film of all time? If you had to pick one.
Oh, gosh. I just keep coming back to Stagecoach.
Do you really?
Yeah,
the original Stagecoach.
The original
one. John Wayne
Stagecoach. I always call it the Citizen Kane of Westerns, which is, of course, funny because Orson Welles really studied Stagecoach before making Citizen Kane.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he loved Ford, and but that was the movie that reportedly he watched over and over again. And I should just throw in, as long as we're talking about Courtney, about and you know what his writing that he's also been doing so well with his series
Nemo.
Of shotgun novels.
Oh, not shotgun Nemo Rising,
right. He's got a lot of very good stuff in print right now.
Yeah, he does. His Shotgun series the two that I read were really excellent.
They are. I mean, it's such a sort of daring, fun premise.
Yes.
Doctor who loses an arm in the war and comes back with a shotgun.
Dr. Bishop.
Right.
Yes.
Shotgun on the stump.
I actually, at the Cowboy Festival, I had to remind him that, Court, in 1868, they didn't have Uberti pistols. He goes, oh, damn. I didn't think anybody would catch that.
So many little nuances. When you're doing period pieces, it's that little stupid little thing that's going to hang you up.
It's going to catch you.
You know, and the good thing about the internet is you can do that research. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a staff to do your research anymore. You know, and it's cut away a lot of jobs, which is, you know, really a bad thing. But at the same time, it's made it so that, you know, you can... boom, have the answer now. I don't have to wait till tomorrow and get somebody to respond to me. I can find the answer, and I can verify it, too. So.
Or I don't have to go to the library and check out the book and go home and go through the book. And
as a writer, of course, we all know when you're really rolling, the last thing you want to have to do is to stop
and research.
And so it's just so nice to be able to type in a question and get an answer.
Yeah.
And especially with Westerns, people have become so much more concerned about details. They do care about that. We can both blame and thank Peter Schirraker.
Well, yeah. I mean, Tombstone was the one that put everybody's conscience on make sure it's all realistic.
I have to tell you a real quick story. When I was putting together the short we did called Sundown, Eric Heisner, who you know, and I think you know
too,
played Sundown. And we talked about wardrobe. I said, you guys going to bring your own wardrobe. You were doing a short, low budget, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I told him, okay, I want to do something, but I want you to have a belt buckle. Bob, they didn't wear belt buckles in the 1880s.
They didn't wear belts.
Okay, watch Bonanza, okay? Just pretend you're in Bonanza, you know? And it's funny because you watch some of the TV shows for that period of time. You know, Ben Cartwright's wearing his belt buckle, and then he's wearing his gun belt, you know? And it's so funny. And it's like you said, it's become so much more important now than it was then because we, you know, can verify. I mean, I could pick up this, and my wife and I are sitting there watching TV, and she'll go, I remember him from somewhere. Okay, in about 2 seconds, I find him on IMDb on my phone, and it's like the research is there, you know, and that has made it so much more fun for me.
Right. Well, it's made it more realistic. I mean, people have to do it now because the research is available.
Right. And nobody says a gun is a gun, a saddle is a saddle.
Exactly.
Anymore. You know,
they don't.
And some do.
They all didn't carry Colt pistols and 1892 Winchesters.
That's right. And whenever you watch a Bonanza rerun and Little Joe pulls the gun and fires twice without ever cocking it, you know, it's wrong because that was supposed to
single
be
action.
Pre-Civil War. Yeah,
right.
It was all supposed to be
pre-Civil War action. And he's getting an 1873 Colt.
Hey. And occasionally an Uzi.
Right. Yeah,
that was the last season, I think.
Yeah, and a low slung holster.
Oh, wait a second! And they were doing research. They were ahead of their. It's like a Big Jake, okay? And when they pull out the gun, the automatic or the gas powered weapon, and
well, that was a Mauser. No, that was that German. The other
yeah,
German
was,
well,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, he says, "Well, this is the 1912 model." He says, "Michael, this is 1911. How can we have a 1910? It's a pre-production model.
Right.
Yes.
A great movie, Big Jake.
Big Jake is one of those films you remember every line.
Yes.
It's one of the worst trailers that I ever saw for a John Wayne movie.
Yeah. Especially when he rides the horse down the hill and you know it's not him.
Right.
I didn't see it in the original release because the trailer gave you the whole plot without action.
Yeah.
I mean, all to the end.
Yeah, yeah. God, it's been years since I saw the trailer, but I watched the movie probably a year ago.
I thought
you
were dead. Not hardly.
Yeah. I like that.
Gee, I wonder how it works out.
Jacob McCandles, I thought you were dead. Not hardly.
Great Richard Boone character.
Well, Jim Davis, too, for the short time that he was in the movie.
Yeah, that's true, yes.
Oh, mister, you got me scared. Excellent movie. John Wayne, Stagecoach.
Yeah.
Start of a dynasty right there.
Yep. He had jumped from all those kind of
stuntman and
he had those other westerns where he had the flat brimmed hat and he had the button up shirt
when he was singing Sandy.
Yeah.
And they had a guy on one side of him singing and the other played the guitar. Now those are nice pictures. The Three Musketeers.
They're all the Republican.
They were all done at Corriganville.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were like 60 minutes, 50 minutes. They were real short.
Sure.
Oh, that's all you could sit on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, yes, because you had to sit through three.
I know.
Got to see the Red Rider, and then
and then
then Bob Steele,
and then the cereal that came out. Like,
you know, my introduction to that was at the YMCA. Every Tuesday or Thursday, I forget now. We had movie day, and we used to go to the YMCA, and that's where I'd get to see the cereal, and then
I hear it's fun to stay at the YMCA.
Well, the village people will tell you that.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. But it was like, that was what some kids did, and that was their introduction to some of those movies.
Sure.
You know, because some kids didn't have television.
Right.
You know, some of those shows were on television, but they were so cut up, where it's like they had to get all the commercials in, so you took maybe an hour and a half movie, and they shoved it in with commercials into an hour and a half time frame. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think the first time I saw some of my favorite westerns was years later when I can rent it on a DVD. It's like, that wasn't in there. That wasn't in there.
When they took all the B westerns and cut them for television, they all went down to 53 minutes, no matter what the running time.
Exactly. Exactly. The three reelers.
Yeah.
Well, my kids finally saw Blazing Saddles, the theatrical version, after watching the
cut up
version. It's like, The bean scene, that's like, there's noise in it.
A lot of it.
Aroma-rama.
There you go.
Mongo-like cigars. Great movie. Bobby Jean, wake up.
I'm here. I have another question for Henry.
Well, make it quick because we're out of time.
What would you like?
I know. We have only four minutes left.
Actually, we have about three minutes.
Henry, can you maybe just share a little bit about writing for a magazine? How far in advance do you have to interview your guests, and what's your deadline to get it in for print, in time for print?
You know, that is the trickiest thing that I have found shifting from writing a blog to writing for print, is you need a lead time of at least a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
Three is better. And one of the big problems I have is that there's a whole generation of publicists who do not understand print. And so you fight and you fight to get an interview, and they say, yeah, we're all set. I said, yeah, that issue went 2 months ago.
Right.
And so it really is quite a challenge.
Yeah. I imagine it probably is. I think Court told us the same thing when he would start doing the movie reviews.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very hard to get to see things early enough when you're doing it for print.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's a movie review. It's been out for 6 months.
Yeah. The best was the time I got to see Westworld several months before anyone did. HBO sat me down and let me watch it, and that was great because
all 10 episodes. Wanted it.
I'm sorry?
All 10 episodes?
Oh, no. At that point, I think they only had the first two ready.
Gotcha.
But, that was so great to be able to know that was coming and spread the word. Then again, the nightmare is when people are just as nice to you and they show you The Magnificent Seven several months ahead.
Ah.
And then you still have to review it. And there's, sadly nothing you can say really about it that's nice. And you're the only guy in the screening room, and everyone is standing around you saying, well, are you going to review it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about Denzel Washington's Magnificent?
Yes.
There wasn't much good in that.
There was very little that there's anything good to say about it.
Yeah.
And I felt so bad. But I try not to give bad reviews.
Yeah.
I don't give good reviews to bad movies, but I don't write about. I like to not use space for bad movies if I can get in a review of something good, especially something people will miss.
There you go. Well, Robert, it's time.
We're done.
Plumb out of time.
Golly.
Here, Henry, is magic. It's like we went through an entire 50 minutes.
In 10.
In 10 minutes, yeah. And we woke Bobby Jean up twice.
Yeah. It was like, it was almost like a guy show, huh, Bobby?
Yeah, Bobby. You should have gone ahead and put Jim on the phone. Except he wouldn't have said anything. He just,
Bobby's the queen. She got to step up.
She is the queen.
Absolutely.
We love Bobby. Well, Henry, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having
me. And your web address, of course, is henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
That's right.
And when he remembers that, he can say it out loud.
That's right, www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
And
I'm going to read it, and I'm going to tell you what's in it.
There you go. And catch December's issue of True West Magazine. It's got a picture of Doc Holliday on the front. Actually, a picture of Tombstone with his cup.
That's right, doing the spinning thing.
Yes, his spinning thing. Bob, good to see you.
You too.
And next week we have writer Scott Johnson, who is writing with a nom de plume of Wes Rand.
So we don't know who it is.
We have no clue until next week.
Well, it ain't like Johnson. It's so common. You know, you got
to. Well, yeah. Yeah, it's like, yeah, Johnson. You know, how many other Johnsons have we had on the air? Well, one, you know, for sure. And anyway, Bobby.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure, Bobby.
Okay, woke her up three times now.
Good to see you.
Have another glass of wine, Bobby. And some
Bobby, more Baileys.
I'm heading for home now.
Good girl.
All right.
Love Happy your style. Trails. Happy trails. Have fun. Bob, thanks for being in the studio.
You got it, Jim.
Henry, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure
and
on my end.
For Bob and Bobby Jean and myself and Henry Park, we're out of here.